Have you ever watched an airplane do something that flat out defied everything you thought you knew about aerodynamics? I'm Tail Dragger on Radio Hangar, and today on The Hangar I want to tell you about a man who made thousands of people stare at the sky with their jaws hanging open. Year after year, decade after decade, and half the engineers in the audience still couldn't figure out how he did it. I'm talking about Robert A. Hoover. Bob Hoover, if you know the name, you're already smiling. If you don't, pull up a chair, because this might be the best flying story you've ever heard. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, Bob Hoover was born in Nashville, Tennessee in 1922. He grew up obsessed with airplanes the way a lot of us did, except young Bob took it a step further. As a teenager, he saved up enough money for flying lessons by working at a grocery store, couldn't afford to finish. So he enlisted in the Tennessee National Guard, got himself into the Army Air Corps, and started flying military aircraft before he could legally buy a beer. World War II came along, and Hoover ended up in North Africa, then the Mediterranean Theater, flying Spitfires with the 52nd Fighter Group. Now, here's where it gets interesting. In February of 1944, his Spitfire took hits during a mission over southern France. Engine quit, he went down in the sea and was picked up by German forces. They sent him to Stalag Luft 1, a prisoner of war camp up on the Baltic coast in what's now northern Germany. Most guys would have sat tight and waited for liberation. Not Bob. He escaped. And the way he escaped is pure Hoover. He stole a Focke Wulf 190. Let that sink in. An American fighter pilot, malnourished, beaten up from captivity, climbed into a German fighter he'd never flown before, figured out the cockpit, fired up that BMW radial, and flew himself to freedom. He made it to the Netherlands and landed near Allied lines. The man literally stole an enemy fighter to get home. After the war, Hoover became a test pilot. He worked at Wright Field in Dayton, Ohio, alongside a young captain named Chuck Yeager. The two of them became close friends. When Yeager made his famous flight in the Bell X-1 on October 14, 1947, breaking the sound barrier for the first time, guess who was flying chase? Bob Hoover, in a Lockheed P-80. He was the guy watching Yeager's back on the most important flight in aviation history. Yeager himself said it plainly. He called Bob Hoover the greatest stick and rudder man who ever lived. Not one of the greatest. The greatest. And Chuck Yeager did not hand out compliments lightly. But here's the thing about Bob Hoover that made him truly legendary. It wasn't the war heroics. It wasn't the test flying. It was what he did at air shows for nearly 50 years, starting in the late 1940s and continuing into the 1990s. His signature act was performed in a yellow Rockwell Shrike Commander, a twin-engine business airplane. Not a fighter, not an aerobatic machine. A plain stock, twin-engine airplane that you might see tied down at any municipal airport in America. It had a pair of Lycoming piston engines, fixed gear in the early versions, and it was about as sexy looking as a station wagon, and Bob Hoover would take that airplane and make it dance. He'd come in from behind the crowd, low and fast, and start with a series of rolls. Aileron rolls, barrel rolls, smooth as butter, in a twin-engine airplane that was never designed to roll. The wings would go around and around, and if you were watching from the ground, you'd swear the airplane was on rails. Not a single bobble, not a foot of altitude gained or lost. Then he'd do a loop, a full loop in the Shrike Commander. Pull back, up and over, around the backside, recover right on altitude, right on heading. The geometry was perfect every single time. But the real showstopper, the thing that made Bob Hoover's act unlike anything else in airshow history, was the energy management demonstration. This is the part that made engineers lose sleep. He would shut down one engine, feather the prop, then he'd continue to fly the routine on one engine, doing rolls, doing turns, doing maneuvers that most pilots wouldn't attempt in a healthy airplane with both engines running. The crowd would be holding their breath. Then he'd shut down the second engine, both engines off, both props feathered, dead quiet, except for the wind. And in that silence, with no power at all, Bob Hoover would fly the Shrike Commander through a loop, then a roll, then set up for a landing approach, touch down on the runway, and roll out to a stop right in front of the crowd line, on a dead stick. In a twin that had no power, every single ounce of energy coming from altitude and airspeed that he had stored up like money in the bank. He knew exactly how much energy that airplane had, down to the last foot of altitude and the last knot of airspeed. He flew it like he had a fuel gauge for kinetic energy in the panel. I saw him do this at Oshkosh in the late 80s. I was standing behind the flight line with a couple of buddies, both airline guys, and when he shut down that second engine, the guy next to me grabbed my arm so hard he left a bruise. Nobody spoke. You could hear the wind over the wings, and when that yellow commander touched down, perfect speed, perfect spot, the crowd just erupted. Grown men crying. I'm not ashamed to say I was one of them. People asked him how he did it. How did he calculate the energy? How did he know exactly when to start the loop, when to begin the roll, when to commit to the landing? He'd just smile and say he felt it. Years of flying, thousands of hours, and an intimate understanding of that particular airplane. He said he thought of the airplane's energy like pouring a glass of iced tea. You know, when the glass is almost full, you don't need a measuring cup. You just know. Now here's the part of the story that makes my blood boil, even all these years later. In 1992, the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, pulled Bob Hoover's medical certificate. They said he had cognitive issues. He was 70 years old, and some FAA bureaucrats decided, largely based on a couple of questionable neurological tests, that he was no longer fit to fly. This was the man that Chuck Yeager called the greatest pilot alive. This was the man who, on any given day at any air show in the country, was demonstrating airmanship that no other human being on the planet could match, and the FAA grounded him. Bob fought it. He fought it for 2 years. It went all the way up through the National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB. He had top neurologists examine him. Every one of them said he was perfectly fine. He had some of the most respected test pilots and flight examiners in the world fly with him and evaluate his skills. Every one of them said he was not just competent, he was extraordinary. The case became a cause in the aviation community. Pilots from all over the world wrote letters, signed petitions, showed up at hearings. It was one of the rare times the entire flying community, general aviation pilots, military aviators, airline captains, all of them, stood together and said, "You're wrong." In 1994, the FAA restored his medical. Bob Hoover went right back to the airshow circuit and continued performing for years after that, flying the Shrike Commander, shutting down both engines, pouring that glass of iced tea right down to the last drop. He finally retired from airshow performing in 2000. He was 78 years old. He continued flying privately for years after that. What made Bob Hoover's airshow act so remarkable wasn't just the skill. Though the skill was otherworldly, it was the philosophy behind it. He wasn't flying a purpose-built aerobatic machine with a smoke system and 300 horsepower. He was flying a plane airplane, the kind you and I might rent from the local flight school, and showing what it could do in the hands of someone who truly understood flight. He was demonstrating that great flying isn't about the airplane. It's about the pilot. It's about understanding energy, understanding the air, understanding yourself. He used to say that every takeoff is optional, but every landing is mandatory. He said the most important thing in flying is to never stop learning, and he lived that, even in his 80s, even when he was the most decorated and celebrated pilot in the world. He was still studying, still thinking, still refining. Bob Hoover passed away on October 25, 2016 at the age of 94. The tributes poured in from everywhere, from fighter pilots and astronauts and airline captains and student pilots who'd stood along an airshow fence line and watched that yellow commander roll through the sky in silence and thought for the first time that maybe flying was about more than just getting from here to there. I had the honor of shaking his hand once, at Sun and Fun, sometime in the mid-90s. He was standing by the Shrike Commander, signing autographs, and the line was 100 people deep. When I got up to him, I didn't know what to say. I just told him I'd been flying for 30 years, and he'd made me want to be a better pilot every single one of those years. He looked me right in the eye, shook my hand, and said, "That's the nicest thing anybody's said to me all week." I doubt that was true, but that was Bob Hoover. He made everyone feel like they mattered. If you ever get to the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, there's a display honoring him. There are memorials at several airshow venues around the country. And at Oshkosh, every year you can still feel his presence. When the aerobatic acts go up and the engines howl and the crowd cheers, somewhere in the back of it all is the ghost of a yellow Shrike Commander, engines silent, wings whispering through a perfect loop, flown by a man who understood airplanes the way a poet understands words. This one was drawn from several sources, including Bob Hoover's autobiography, Forever Flying, and various interviews and tributes archived by the Experimental Aircraft Association and the National Aviation Hall of Fame. If you want to dig deeper, you can find wonderful footage of his airshow performances online that'll give you chills. More aviation stories and streaming around the clock at RadioHangar.com. Fly safe out there, and next time you're in the pattern, think about how much energy you've got in the bank. Bob would have wanted you to.